This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is novelist T. Jefferson Parker, author of 22 books. It's been a long time, but welcome back to our program.
It's nice to be back.
T. Jefferson, what does the T stand for?
Nothing. Mom and Dad put it there as a decorative initial because they thought it would look good on the door of the Oval Office.
Well, but it looks pretty good on books, right?
Yeah, they got a mystery writer instead of a statesman.
Your books are crime fiction. Most are about Southern California, sometimes down to the Mexican border. Your new book, though, takes place in a real ski town, Mammoth Lakes, up in the Sierra Nevada. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
It came about after decades of me going up to Mammoth Lakes, California, to fish. It's a great place to go fly fishing, and I love to fly fish, so I've been going up there for years. And when it came time to teach my two sons to ski, to familiarize them with skiing and snowboarding, I took to the slopes myself as a neophyte to show them the ropes a little. And through my time on the mountain up there as a bumbling dad skier trying to turn his sons on to the great sport of skiing, I began to see the competitive guys and women out there, you know, the real racers who were on the circuit, who were trying to get up all the way to the Olympics. And I became fascinated with their lives and the intensity and the abandon with which they must attack the slopes and live their lives in order to pursue lives as professional skiers, very much like artists. It's a really hard row to hoe. And I met some, and I've interviewed some, and I admire them a lot. And I got very turned on to the new sport of snowcross racing. I don't know if you know about
snowcross. What's snowcross racing?
I'll tell you. Snowcross racing has been in the Olympics twice. It was in Sochi last time and in Vancouver in 2010. So it's only been in the Olympics twice. It's been around not for that many years. And what it is it's run on a downhill ski course, very much like the downhill racers will run. Big jumps, you know, really steep altitudes, big banks, big gates, super, super fast run. But instead of being run against a clock, one man at a time, it's four people at a time. On this narrow course at breakneck speeds, they go so fast, they actually draft behind each other to catch the free air, they call it. And in a little over a minute, it's over, but it's exciting to watch. There is no contact allowed, but there is what they call incidental contact. And the judges in ski cross are pretty liberal. So when you watch a ski cross race, some of them, it looks like a cross kind of between NASCAR and roller derby. It's very exciting. So I had to write about it.
How does the real town of Mammoth, like, what do they think of your book?
And I don't know if they're going to like the book or not. I hope they like the book because I love Mammoth Lakes. But like any novel, this is not necessarily the truth of Mammoth Lakes.
Of course.
And there's a terrible crime, a murder that overhangs this book and sort of flavors the story. And I think, based on my long experience of writing about real cities, even though I put crimes into those cities that haven't necessarily occurred, I think they will like the book, and I think that they will shake my hand rather than punch me in the face.
And that's been your experience before, you're
so
saying?
So far.
Yeah,
yeah,
so far. What's happening as the book opens up?
As the book opens up, we are confronted with a very strong, loud, clear, weird voice, a woman telling us a story, telling us about her killing of her husband 25 years ago, kind of why she did it, kind of how she did her time, kind of what she thinks about it now. And that shooting 25 years prior to the beginning of the story motivates and sets up everything that happens in the novel. So Cynthia, her name is, she introduces the book with her recounting of that terrible murder. Everybody knows everybody, and it's about two families who are very closely intertwined.
Two of your intertwined characters are the half-brothers, Sky and Wiley, and you always give your characters common problems of the day. What are their issues?
Their issues? Well, let's see. Wiley's main issue is that he is a bastard son, in the old sense that he is looked down upon and not accorded the privileges of his patronage, his father and mother. Sky, his half-brother, they have the same father and different mothers. Sky's problem is one of growing up with an arguably insane mother, and two, terrible bouts of depression that have haunted him throughout his life and seem to be occurring with more rather than less frequency. And Skye has always been reluctant, if not stubbornly opposed to any kind of treatment. So he treats himself by going out into the desert, into this cabin with the dog, and he kind of throws himself around, and he suffers pain, and he rants, and he raves, and he lets this terrible black feeling wash through him for a few days, and then he comes back to Mammoth Lakes and tries to pick up his life again as a very talented, very intensely motivated professional ski cross racer.
They're both scares, right? Rivalry is woven through.
It's what the whole book is about. It's a two-person rivalry, half-brothers who are competing absolutely ferociously and ruthlessly for a spot on the U.S. ski cross, Olympic ski cross team. That's what the whole book is about. And the book is built around really three big race scenes, the last one of which will decide which one of them, if either, can go on to the next step that it will take to move into a position to join that Olympic competition. And the book is fashioned to point the reader towards that last climactic race. I kind of set it up as it's kind of a Western in the sense that it's two antagonists, and you know they're going to have the gunfight, and they've agreed on the gunfight, and it's just a matter of when they're going to set it up and when they're going to do it. So I've come to think of Crazy Blood, the new novel, as a high noon on skis.
Well, who all has crazy blood?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And what is crazy blood? And what do you do with it if you're born with it? And so these two half-brothers are very different. Same father, different mothers, as I said. Mm-hmm. And what they do, which is in the book, which is what I think we all do in our lives, is we take the blessings and the curses that we are born with, and we live out our years trying to maximize the blessings and minimize the curses. And in those years, we create our fate. And that's what this book is about. It's about these two young men trying to do what they can with their own crazy blood.
But it's more than them with the crazy blood, right? I mean, it seems like there are other characters who... The woman who introduces the book in chapter one.
It comes directly through her. It comes directly through Cynthia. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is the matriarch both for good and for ill. And she says on the very first page of the book that when she was tried for the murder of her husband, the prosecutor wanted to prove that she was sane at the time of the killing, because then she could be held responsible. Whereas if she could prove insanity, if she could prove craziness, if you will, she would be given a different punishment and a different path. And she remarks early on that, you know, the prosecutor didn't, you know, nobody wants to put away the crazy blood. Everybody's kind of afraid of it. And it has its own kind of odd privilege in the legal system in a way.
You said years ago, newspaper work is the hardest work I've ever done. True?
Pretty much. Yeah. Waiting tables was harder when I was in college. I waited tables to get through school. And I'm a very one thing at a time person. You know, I'm not a multitasker. And so waiting tables, when I walked into my very first wait station, finally, after brief training, I was given 7 tables at a restaurant called the Magic Pan in South Coast Plaza, which is a busy, busy giant mall. And I just about froze with indecision because I couldn't figure out how to handle 7 tables. But besides that, being a newspaper reporter is... it's pretty darn hard. You have to learn how to ask people difficult questions, get right up in their face, and you have to get your facts right because it's right there on the paper with your name attached to it, and you have to write concisely and clearly, and you have to write good, interesting stories. And that all sounds kind of easy, under a deadline also. And that sounds kind of easy, but it's not. It's a hard thing to do.
Over your long career, you've written at least 2 series plus standalone novels. Edgar's are the top of the heap in mystery writing awards, and hardly any writer ever gets more than 1, yet you have 3. What are your writing ambitions going forward?
Plowing forward, I make a deal with myself after every book that my going in position on the next book, my most basic tenet for the next novel, is going to be to make it better than the last one. You know, that's always my kind of psychic mindset. Mm-hmm. Make it better than the one before. And I do think, I sincerely believe this, and I don't think it's you know, an aging man's delusions. I think that if I look back on my books rationally over the past 30 years and the past 22 books, I believe firmly that I'm a better writer now than I was when I started. And I think that in some ways, my best storytelling years are still ahead of me.
Well, thank you. My guest is T. Jefferson Parker, author of Crazy Blood, published by St. Martin's. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.